A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to our good partners at Horicon Bank. It is big game, Super Bowl weekend, of course. So I'm going to start with just a quick story about one of Milwaukee's true big game originals, Major Goolsby's. When was the last time you were at Major Goolsby's? Right there on the northeast corner of Kilbourne Avenue and North Velar Phillips Avenue, the old 4th Street. Been there since 1972. Did you know that before it was Major Goolsby's, it was owned by former Marquette coach Al McGuire? Anyway, that's a whole other story that maybe you'll see in the Al McGuire documentary movie at some point. But through the years, Major Goolsby's just has become like always on the national list. One of the best sports bars in America, for sure. I was reminded of this last Friday night. Got invited to a business group event curated by Mark Cast from Team Lammy. Vince Vitrano from Wisconsin's Morning News was there. Folks like Matt Dorner from Milwaukee Downtown, Paul Schwartz, who runs the Milwaukee Public Market, Peggy Williams-Smith from Visit Milwaukee, architect Chris Socha, who's just doing amazing things around town. It was a really great group. We all went to the UWM Panthers game. It's a tough loss. The Panthers have had a lot of injuries this year. But we had a great time gathering, hanging out, learning more about UWM. Despite the loss, we decided, all right, we got to keep the night going. We wandered over to Major Goolsby's. The place was packed. The sports card event, it's run by Michael Sampson, just got out. So there was like all these tables full of sports cards and wheeling and dealing, people talking value, trading stories. It was like this Milwaukee classic energy going on at Goolsby's. It was great. But I tell the whole story because I ordered a cheeseburger. If you haven't had a Goolsby's cheeseburger in a while, you must. But the waitress brings a cheeseburger over to me, and I grabbed one of those like plastic knives in the middle of the table and went to cut it in half. And the whole thing flips, like the whole burger flips, hits the floor. And of course, like everyone around me says, 10-second rule, you know, grab it, pick it up. And I'm like, no, like this is like 50 years of like feet and sports on this floor. I love the place, but I'm not eating this burger. Like within like 30 seconds, the waitress is back with a brand new cheeseburger. Here you go. We'll take care of it, she says. I mean, it literally felt like she just saw the whole thing happen, went up to the bar, grabbed a new one, and said, we gotcha. And it just made me so happy. Like, that is customer service. Like, that is why local, genuine places like Major Goolsby's or whatever your favorite sports bar is, why places like that survive for the long term. Just a great reminder this Super Bowl weekend. Support the spots that you love, the places that show up every day and to help make your community better. That's what they do. Like, that's what sports is all about. So today, we're going to have some super thoughts for sure from a couple people that make their community better each and every day. Technology and more from Martin Moore from COS. Then our friend Ted Lukash is going to join us. He's a consulting partner at the Era Group. We're going to talk phones, libraries, and more. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ.
It's time to fast forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on The Upswing. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio by Martin Moore, the future of almost everything. It's back. It's 2026. Martin,
thanks
for taking the time.
Let's go, Jeff.
All right. So we're going to start with something. It might be a little too niche, but I got to get your take on it. A bunch of different AI topics. So I'm going to start with Maltbook. And listeners and fans are probably saying, what is Maltbook, Jeff? Tell me more. So the people that are hearing the term for the first time, can you tell me what this is, and should I be scared? Because what I saw about 10 days ago about Maltbook, sure. I was kind of scared.
Sure. It's always funny when you try to explain Maltbook to someone who doesn't know what it is, because I'm always like, it's like Reddit. And then people are like, well, I don't know what Reddit is. Maltbook is basically, it's sort of like a, it's like an online social media forum where, you know, you create these AI agents, these sort of like chat bots, and then basically you throw them out into the world and they create posts and they communicate with each other and teach each other things and try and solve all the world's problems without any human interaction at all. So all you can do as an actual human is just cruise it and see what these AI agents are talking about.
Like AI role playing in public?
Basically. That's what
it is. So where's the human interaction behind this?
So the human basically creates the type of like AI agent that they want to like put onto this platform, and then you kind of just like let the dog off the leash, and then it goes and it finds its space, whether it's technology or language or arts and entertainment or healthcare or whatever it is, and it meets other AI agents that are maybe similar versed, and they teach each other and create conversations, and that's basically sort of the nutshell of it. And the idea or like the thesis of this was to like have these things sort of like train and maybe become like sentient and create their own language. Some of them were trying to create their own religion. And so that's kind of in a nutshell what Maltbook is.
So as a creator, do you see this as like a toy, a warning sign, or just a preview of how we're all going to work more with AI agents? Because you go to maltbook.com right now and the little subhead says where AI agents share, discuss and upvote, whatever that is, humans welcome to observe.
Sure.
I mean, that's I don't know. It worries me a little bit.
I mean, do you know what the dead internet theory is?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. A lot of the content isn't real, essentially.
It's basically that the majority of what you see on the internet, whether it's social media or web pages or comments or posts or anything like that, is all basically like AI driven, bot driven, algorithmic driven, and that's basically what Maltbook is. Hmm. And so, to answer your question, you know, like, do I think like that's the future? Does it excite me or anything like that? No, I hate it. I think it's terrible. I am not the biggest fan of AI for myriad reasons.
Okay.
And so, although it was a neat experiment, I really didn't know what value it was going to provide when you try and like cut the human being out of the equation.
Interesting.
Other than a Terminator.
Yeah. Well, I think we're kind of. The way I see AI from a community and commerce standpoint is that we're in about year three, I think, of probably this like 10-year AI experiment that we're going to see where it all goes. But it's feeling more and more like infrastructure. And I think we'll feel that during the Super Bowl because we've probably already seen the preview of the Anthropic Super Bowl debut ad that's called A Time and a Place, where it pushes back on what's coming with AI, and that's ads, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, AI can curate an ad for every single person. Like right now, I mean, you know this. When you create an ad, you're kind of fishing with dynamite. You're trying to create something that's engaging and compelling that will garner the most eyes. Yeah. But you're getting a very small percentage of interaction and engagement. Whereas AI, you can create an individual ad in seconds curated just for that person's algorithm, just for their interests, just for their gender or their race or their religion or their location or upbringing or whatever it is. And I think that's where we're really going to see huge jumps in AI in marketing and commerce in the next year or two.
Yeah. And
we're already seeing it. Amazon laid off a vast majority of their marketing department because AI is making all the ads for Amazon. I know this because they told that to me because I'm in that.
You're selling
space.
Headphones on Amazon, right? Well, Anthropic owns the family of Claude AI platforms,
yes.
And that's going to be the Super Bowl ad.
That ad is amazing.
The ads are they're really timely. I think they're funny.
Yeah.
They poke fun at a competitor, which is ChatGPT, that's owned by rival OpenAI. That is rolling out ads on their platform. I hear that there's a $200 minimum commitment on the advertiser side. So it's going to be some super targeting, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way to go. It's an interesting strategy, I think, from Anthropic. Because the reality is Anthropic's probably going to serve ads somewhere down the road, right?
Sure, exactly. They will. You know, I hate the idea of having ads in my AI client. Like, the only reason you exist is because you scraped the internet and stole you're going to charge me to give me copy that you stole from me and my friends and neighbors and employees and images and all my Facebook videos. And then you're going to charge me to recycle and regurgitate that out to me. Yeah. It's the same thing like paying for verification and paying for social media. You're making your money off selling me ads off of using my data and feeding it to Amazon and Google. And so you want me to also pay on top of giving you my data?
Yeah.
I struggle with ads in AI.
So what are you excited about in terms of AI that you'll act on from a commerce standpoint, from a shopping standpoint, maybe to book appointments, maybe to make decisions? Like there's use cases all around. So some of that from your lens as a marketer, as a storyteller, as a creator, it's got to excite you where it's all going, right?
Absolutely. I mean, as a consumer, you can use AI to find the best prices for a flight or a hotel or that shirt or pair of sneakers you're looking for, or you can use it to maybe help you at least not diagnose an illness or an ailment, but kind of point you in a more expedited direction. It's great for expediting things you're already good at, whether you're a good copywriter or you're someone who edits photos like me. It has its place as a tool. But when we start talking about AI is something that's going to completely replace a human being at creating copy or an image or creating ads, that's where I start getting trepidation and the conversation becomes a little bit more real.
That's where you draw the line and say this part stays 100% human, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's still ultimately what we're all about in terms of buyers, shoppers, marketers. Human connection matters a whole lot. Martin Moore from Koss. Always a pleasure to have you on The Upswing. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the future of work, a personal upswing note a bit, and then we're going to Bayshore Town Center because there's some new stuff coming, and I know Martin has thoughts. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Martin Moore. Martin? There's a lot of talk about human-first enterprises, durable skills, critical thinking, communication, adaptability as a hedge against automation. From your lens, tell me what you would tell a 20-something Milwaukeean who wants to be a creator in 2026. What's that like 30-day habit that you would give to him or her to go out and build so they don't get swallowed by all the AI and all the algorithms and all the technology? Like, how do you educate around human skills in this technology world that we all live in?
That's a great question. Let me process it really quick. I think in this day and age, there's too many cheat codes to try and fast track success, whether that's being an entrepreneur and starting a small business, whether that's being a photographer or a YouTuber, a TikToker, or whatever it is. People want to try and find a cheat code and get that process expedited as fast as they can. And AI is a very tantalizing little tool that you can use to do that. What I would suggest is to forget about all that and just create every day. Whatever it is that you want to do, do it every single day, because you're going to learn so much quicker and you're going to expedite that whole process, whether it's learning how to edit a video, whether it's learning how to write better, whether it's learning about how to start a business. And those are just skills that you can't read or be taught or learn through a YouTube video. You can only learn that kind of stuff by doing. And so, like for me, when I think about my YouTube channel, when I was vlogging every day here in Milwaukee, I learned very quickly how to edit, how to tell a story, how to distribute it, how to use social media as a tool to get it out there and get seen. And so create every day. That's just something that you're not going to be able to cheat.
So that biggest competitive advantage is your ability to do what now in the modern workforce?
Outwork people. Outwork them. When you lean into the ability to outwork someone, it doesn't matter how much money they have or how much time they have or resources or status or whatever it is. When you can outwork someone, when you're up before them while they're sleeping and, you know, you're up while they go to bed, that for me, that was always that was my biggest tool and card in my back pocket, was being able to outwork somebody.
And just don't fear change because it's coming. It's always
embrace
coming.
It
is constant. And you have to embrace it. Like, I think it's interesting that you look at the CEO level. CEOs, no matter how big the company, spend a ton of their time sending emails, communicating, and reaching out. AI isn't going to take that away from them, and they aren't going to lose their jobs, right? They're going to get some time back, possibly, but they're getting paid for the hard work and what is in their mind.
Absolutely.
And that we can't fear that jobs are being taken away. We have to embrace the change is coming, and you have to figure out a path forward.
Absolutely.
One of the things, in terms of a path forward, you look at the state of Wisconsin, we'll have a new governor next fall. And if you had a chance, Martin, to sit down with one of the candidates right now as they canvass the entire state and put something new on their platform, what would that be?
You know, I really want to see in Wisconsin just more like pragmatic leadership over like performative politics. I want to see someone come in and have a plan for kitchen table conversations, for things like healthcare and education and jobs and infrastructure and finding new ways to bring revenue to the state of Wisconsin so that we can sort of build and support this big vision that we have for this state rather than just peddle rhetoric and try to win elections and make your party happy, because I feel like that's what we've been doing for longer than we should have, and it really isn't getting us very far. Yeah. And so I would say really focusing on the things that matter to every single Wisconsinite.
A platform for authentic connection.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. All right, let's fast forward here to Bayshore Town Center.
Ooh.
You and I have talked Bayshore in the past, but you look at Bayshore in Glendale. It's evolving.
Mm-hmm.
I think they recently announced 8 new tenants.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt Annie's and Cinnabon just opened theirs. Sun Life, the Little Gym, Hot Wax, Nana Cafe is opening. First Watch, which is the national breakfast brunch chain, is opening there. Ideal Partners is opening a new fitness gym. And Carhartt. You know, Carhartt's all over, but Carhartt's moving in, which is a good sign. What does that kind of that retail mix say about what people want in a mall today? And do you think Bayshore is getting there?
I don't think Bayshore is getting there.
Okay. All right. You're a neighbor.
Bayshore still has like the old school mall mentality. I don't think they've really let me put it like this. Malls used to be this place where you would go to like shop and buy stuff. The thing is now everybody knows what they want before they go to a mall. And the internet and Amazon ruin that. So you need to rethink of a mall as a place for discovery, where the business model is predicated on discovering new experiences, whether it's food, it's predicated on community, it's predicated on culture, and you don't know what you're going to get when you go there.
Yeah.
On another mall, I know what I'm going to get when I go to Auntie M's and get a pretzel. I know what I want to already buy.
I mean, so adding food and beverage, I think, to any mall space creates that sense of community, right? It's like, what's that point of difference, though?
You look at something like here, Third Street Market Hall, we have all these local places. These are some of these places you can't just be in like Brookfield and drive down the street like you can a McDonald's or a Culver's and get it. You have to come here.
Yeah.
The Circle Sports Bar, you can come here and watch a game, watch a Packers game or a Brewers game or a Bucks game and connect with people that you otherwise might not. And, you know, those are the sorts of experiences you're not going to get at an Annie M's or you're going to get at a Chick-fil-A. Like, you know, and so you have to lean into those types.
So if I put the title of creative director of Bayshore Town Center on you,
mm-hmm.
are there like tech or creator-driven experiments that you would launch there first? Is it like, whoa, we want a live content studio there? Are there AR experiences? Are there creator markets? Like, what would you want to see that would enhance your experience?
I would love to see stuff like small, like little podcasting studios and studios where you can maybe kids who don't have access to computers and stuff can come in here and take photos and can make videos and create content. All kinds of experiences like that. And then on top of that, you need to make sure, and again, I always talk about Third Street Market Hall, you need to create an ecosystem where all the businesses inside the mall rely on each other. So you have 620 here. Okay, what do you guys do on your lunch break? Probably a lot of you go out here and you eat the food that's here. So you're creating business within the ecosystem already without having a single person walk through the door.
Yeah.
And so those are other things that you have to think about.
And I think much of that is driven by the cultures within each one of the communities that inhabit that ecosystem.
Yes, 100%.
And it maybe is a little harder to do at a traditional mall because of all the different leases.
Right.
But when you have all these different tenants, whether it's a Trader Joe's, an Apple store, a new smaller cafe, they should be able to come together and connect. And you have that neighborhood in the middle of Bayshore, which is the yard.
Yep.
There's opportunity there.
There is.
I hope
it's been
stagnant. Continues to grow. I hope it continues to grow. The good thing is, 8 new tenants coming to Bayshore. That's a good start.
I'll take
it. It's a good opportunity, and we're going to take the win. Martin, always appreciate your time. We're going to do it again very soon. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined in studio with Ted Lukash. Ted, appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So I want to get your expert lens on a bunch of different cell phone issues. That was your business a few years ago. But I preface this by T-Mobile recently acquired U.S. Cellular, right? Acquired their entire wireless operations. The U.S. Cellular Connection stage at Summerfest will now be called the T-Mobile stage. Festival announced that officially this past week. No acts on that stage announced quite yet, but I'm sure they're coming. So no matter if a listener or a fan is a T-Mobile customer or not, since you grew up in that space, when you look at the average person's cell phone bill, what are the top two or three things that we are overpaying for? And what can we do to hatchet that down?
Well, my career was long in that business, about 3 decades. So I looked at literally thousands of bills. So I can tell you that right-sizing the plan is most commonly an error that people don't look for or find. And what I mean by that is that they're on a dated or incorrect plan. Hmm. So the carriers will come back. AT&T, for example, will redo their unlimited plan. You may be on 4 versions ago of an unlimited plan. And somebody along the way told you don't ever come off of it. But the reality is you should, because you might be paying.
But it's never really easy to do that. It's not just like a press an upgrade button and boom, you're on the next plan.
Exactly.
There's a process that's hard to understand.
Yeah, you have to advocate for yourself. So do a little bit of research. And don't be afraid to pick up the phone. Like I said, about every 6 months to a year, you should be looking at that and making sure that you're on the right plan. My mother-in-law doesn't need to be on an unlimited 4K streaming plan with hotspot to play
Neither
words with friends.
Neither does my 13-year-old daughter, but don't tell her that.
Yeah. So just make sure you're not paying for that, because a lot of times those are $10 or $20 more premium.
So from a typical consumer lens, when's the right time to upgrade my phone? Like, the carrier's not going to tell me that necessarily. And how do I know when it makes sense? Is it when it's paid off? Is it when it's broken? Like, how do I know?
Yeah, so what happened some years ago is when they kind of eliminated 2-year contracts that were in a bad taste in the public, and people didn't like them, and they felt they were trapped to their carrier and all those things. So what the carriers decided to do going forward was they have an installment model where they'll credit back a portion or all of your payments. So those are spread out over 24, 36 months. You kind of want to make sure that you're in that later time period. Mm-hmm. If you can somehow get on a 24-month, I highly recommend it, because that just allows you to upgrade your equipment faster with trade-in. Yeah. And then your equipment's also fresher, so it's worth more when you trade it in.
So if I'm going into the store and I'm scrolling through the fine print on the contract before I have to click the little box, like what should I look for? I don't know. Are there insurance? Is there fees? Like, what's the trade-in value? Like, all that stuff that's in the fine print. What should I really focus on?
Yeah, trading in the device is important. That is a lever that they'll pull to lure you either.
And what's your experience there? Should I trade it in directly with it? Carrier, should I sell it on a third-party site? Like, where can I optimize the value?
Most of the time, if you have a current phone, and what they – a lot of the carriers will go 2 or 3 generations back. you're better off trading it in with the carrier. They're going to give you the most because they have the most at stake to keep you there. Okay. If you get into the open market, places like Gazelle and other things like that, you're going to notice that they're worth considerably less at that point. The things that you need to really be concerned about when you're trading in a phone is making sure that the promotion matches what your device is. So that you're level setting it so that if you bring in a phone that's in, you know, for example, an iPhone 15 and that's in the current trade model, but yours has a cracked back lens and you don't notice that. And then when you go, they go to process it, you're not granted the full amount of that trade. So a lot of carriers now are starting to do something called any condition, which I like, even though I'm not in the business anymore. It would have been great when I was there. But I like that because that takes away any of the guessing game. I will definitely recommend for anybody doing that type of promotion or trade-in to, if you're doing it in the store to get printed paper, or you know, old school, or email to your phone with the promotion, or if you're doing it online, screen print, because the carriers will change promotions midstream.
Do you think I get a better deal if I go into the store versus doing it online?
Online is usually less traditionally.
Really? Okay, just more incentives, less friction for the companies.
Yeah. Yeah, they're simpler transactions, and with COVID, they the ability to move your data from device to device was, I want to say completely mastered, but it was completely changed. It was an evolution where going into the shop doesn't really make any sense. That was back in my glory retail days, that was half your day was flipping people's pictures from phone to phone or text.
We're talking with Ted Lukash, consulting partner at the Era Group. Ted, a final question on this whole cell phone thing, if you will. From a business lens, small, medium-sized business, how is the conversation different today? Like, what should a business owner ask the wireless rep to make sure that they're not leaving money on the table?
I came from both sides. So I was sold consumer for many years, but I was a early, I guess, adopter of business sales. And the thing that you're going to know is being an advocate for that type of transaction is the carriers know that business customers stay longer, are more likely to grow, and have higher revenue. So take advantage of that on your end and use that, because a lot of the business reps have inside promotions, which are extra incentives. I know I had them back in the day.
So if you're a 2 to 4 person business,
still counts.
Ask for the business discount because they're there because the volume is to be had.
You bet.
And discounts will apply, right?
Yeah, and often they'll waive your fees, which they don't do for consumers. And even they'll have, for businesses, they'll have a benefits program you can offer your employees at no cost to you. You look good. What do you care? You know, it's a freebie. So I definitely, if you can and are eligible and you have a tax ID, you definitely want to set up a business account.
Very good. When we come back, everyone's talking affordability, whether you're a consumer or a business. Ted, I'm going to get your take on a very basic level. I want to see what problems you're hearing from CFOs right now. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are joined in studio by Ted Lukash. Ted's a consulting partner at the Era Group. So, Ted, everyone's talking affordability now. A lot of politicians, of course, but it hits on the consumer and business level for sure. You work day-to-day with chief financial officers. What are you hearing in terms of problems, if you will, from CFOs right now?
I think a lot of CFOs are recovering a little bit from the tariff bomb that hit about this time last year. Is that right?
Yeah.
And it set them a little bit off guard because there were just so many inconsistencies and uncertainties, and it just kind of changed a lot of projections and that type of thing. So you're seeing that, and then there's a new regulatory landscape that's emerging. And most of it's positive, but some of it can be negative. Mm-hmm. So they're really weighing a lot of those options, and I think it's weighing on them, and decisions are either happening fast or happening slow. It kind of like changed the trajectory of a normal year.
Speed up to slow down or whatever the right phrase is there. So from a company lens, I'm sure you're talking to CFOs that think they're pretty tight on the game. Mm-hmm. Like they know the expenses left and right, in and out. But Your job is to go in and find and help the CFO find additional savings. What's a meaningful example of that that you often find in businesses?
Well, the cool part about the Era Group model, which I'm a part of, is it's international. There's 1,200 of us floating around the globe, and we're all insiders. We came from, you know, in my case, I came from AT&T, but other people came from ocean freight or lubricants, things like that. So everybody has their own little niche and experience level that you're not going to find on the web or through AI sources because they're not in there. So things like we were talking about with prior, there's inside information, inside knowledge that you have. So a lot
telecom is something for sure if you're going through a checklist. A lot of businesses are spending on multiple levels there. That seems to be an easy one to save some money on, right?
Yeah, telecom is a good one. Insurance is another one that's interesting because I think it contradicts itself. You think your broker's doing work for you on your behalf, and hopefully most of them are and ethically are situated that way. But in reality, they're paid more if your rates go up. So it puts them in a kind of a conundrum that, well, how hard am I really trying? I don't know. I'm not going to call anybody out or go down a negative route. But it can be a very interesting conversation when you challenge those thoughts. So, in that sense, moving brokers in insurance for telecom, shopping carriers. But a lot of times, even when you shop a carrier, you think or you're doing proposal, you're trying to get the best rate, you don't know the questions to ask. So even researching it, you'll end up with misguided information. So you get an RFP and you think, oh, I just saved 20%. But then the fine print, on something like shipping, you don't realize there's minimums or whatnot. So there's a lot involved.
What are some of the other examples? I mean, everyone from a leader standpoint wants more time to work on the business, not necessarily in the business each and every day. But when you're in the business, sometimes you don't see exactly what's in the business. Is it utilities? Is it logistics? Is it those insurance products that maybe we're just glancing over and seeing the same line item each and every month and not thinking about, wow, should be time to renegotiate?
Yeah, a lot of stuff is simple as like elevator contracts. Oh, well, we put in an elevator from a certain vendor, and well, we can't negotiate that.
Yeah.
Well, you can.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Cleaning contracts are probably another one.
Cleaning
right?
contracts. We just went through a very large case of that, and it was interesting. Ended up staying with the same vendor, but we introduced technology, things like IMOPs and power scrubbers, and things that eliminated. Headcount, sorry.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
it made him much, much more productive, and the cost to the end user, to the corporation was significantly less. So it's all good stuff.
All right. Let's turn the page a little bit, Ted, if you will. You are president of the Frank L. Weinberg Library Board.
Yeah.
So when you talk to people, not only in Mequon and Thiensville, about the library, talk to people anywhere. You're a great networker. I see you at events all the time. But how do you describe today what a library really does in 2026, like beyond the books?
Yeah, I think a lot of times people think of it as, I don't want to sound awful, but bookends, the elderly and then the children. And I'm a big proponent of using the library at all ages. So in Mequon, we have a very robust program for students in high school, which is unique. So they'll do a lot of study sessions in the library. We also have a large amount, most libraries have this, a large amount of community programming. So you'll get everything from your speaker series to your fine arts series, that type of thing. And the other thing, which is unique to libraries, and almost all the libraries in the area have this, we call it Library of Things. It's the ability to rent a power washer. It's the ability to get tickets to the art museum. It's the ability to get a radon detector. So I know that – I think Whitefish Bay has that too. There's a number of local libraries that offer those benefits. And people's – my generation would go in and say, oh, hey, there's a album or a CD or a tape or a movie that we'll rent for the kids. And that's what they think of the Library of Things. But it's really evolved. And it's kind of a neat throw in. And then for businesses, our library offers something called A to Z database. That's a subscription that would cost me a sizable amount of money if I did it on my own. And I use it all the time. And there's meeting rooms there and all kinds of fun stuff. And most libraries offer that.
Yeah. I mean, we said earlier in the show, Ted, that everyone's talking affordability. Another big word is access. And I think when you really look at the heart of what a library is all about in a community, it's about access to information and opening that up to everyone. And I'm sure you see that from the board level.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we offer free Wi-Fi. We offer a place for people to meet. You know, we have an advocacy committee, so we make sure that the building's accessible for all. We have a pickup window for quick pickups. We started that during COVID and we kept it. So there's a lot of positive things going on. On the sustainability level, we added solar last year. We got some grants and it was a fantastic project. We're going to weatherize the building this year, you know, just on a different level. But there's just a lot of unbelievably great things going on at your local library. I highly advise you visit.
Very good. Talking with Ted Lukash, consulting partner at the Era Group. Ted, when we come back, I got a few more library questions for you. I know National Library Week is in a couple weeks. I want to see what your plans are there. And then we're going to talk networking in the area because, you know, books and networking, they go together for sure. But I know you have wonderful relationships all around the area. But I'm sure you also have an action plan for getting to better relationships. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. We are joined in studio by Ted Lukash. Ted is a consulting partner at the Era Group, also the president of the Frank L. Weinberg Library Board in beautiful Mequon, Thiensville. Ted, the board oversees the policy, the budget, hires the executive director. What's something, though, that most people would be surprised to learn about how a public library is governed day to day?
It's interesting in this state because we have two types of libraries. We have a joint library, which I'm a part of, which is Mequon and Thiensville, and then you have a municipal library. So a municipal library would be like Milwaukee, where the employees are actually employees of the city, okay, not of the board. So it's a quasi-government setup, and it can cause some North Shore went through some challenges on that. But most of the joint libraries are run pretty smoothly.
Yeah.
So I think that's a surprise to people when you say, well, this is a different kind of board.
So are there things on the legislative side then that you are lobbying for? And if so, how do you do that and when?
As a matter of fact, next Tuesday, the 10th, is Library Legislation Day for Wisconsin.
Okay.
And it's going to be my third one. We go and we storm the Capitol and we meet with our legislators. Our state senators.
Bring books and library cards. And,
well, we usually present them with a little something.
All right.
And it is an incredibly positive day. We thank them for their generosity. We have one of the better funded library systems in the whole country. It's amazing how much support we have from both sides of the aisle on it. There doesn't seem to be much of a division in positivity there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat. We have last couple of years, governors come out and given a little pep talk. And then we go across the street and we meet with them and we bring our agendas along. We have a little piece of legislation we're working on to kind of even the scales from joint libraries and municipals that was changed a few years back. So I'm going to be working on that and getting my legislation on.
All right. Speaking of governors, I heard, because we were having a conversation a couple weeks ago, that you saw a candidate for Wisconsin Governor Tom Tiffany recently.
Oh, yeah.
That's good networking. That's really good networking. My personal voting style, I'm just going to throw this out there, I only vote for candidates that I've personally met. So I can check that off the box. But let's say, whether it's Tom Tiffany or any of the other candidates, you had an opportunity to play political consultant, sit down for 20 minutes. What would your call, Ted, be for a campaign platform to help power Wisconsin's business forward for this next campaign?
I just think they need to take things seriously. And it's been kind of back and forth, a little too political. I think the core of it, and I know you're a big community and business guy, so you get it more than most people, but it's really the challenge is trying to figure out how to get the conversations moving forward. And we need more corporate headquarters here. I don't think that's a secret. I love what's going on downtown, as do you, where some of the, you know, Rexnord and Milwaukee Tool, and I'm probably leaving somebody out and they're going to be mad at me, but they're moving back downtown, which is a really nice thing. Fiserv, sorry. Yeah. But, you know, it's a great experience, but we need to figure out how to actualize the community, and we need politicians that are pro-business. We don't need to be adversarial. We need to be everybody's a client. Everybody's a customer, you know, and we just need to be friendly and use our Wisconsin-ness there. I was kind of surprised the Bears were talking about a new stadium. Yeah. Why didn't we throw our hat in the ring in Kenosha?
Many people have said that. Why not? You look at Kenosha, Pleasant Prairie, there's a lot of land there. Yeah. Like, hey, why not?
They're a business. It would have been nice to get in front of that one.
That's some serious recruitment and retention. All right, finally, Ted, going back to the library board and the commitment and the networking. If you're sitting with somebody in their 20s or 30s that's saying, you know, I really want to get into civic engagement, into board leadership, how do you say that they start? And what's that skill set that eventually gets a young professional to the table?
They have to find something they're passionate about. My kids are in the arts, so that's a very easy one. So getting involved in arts community platforms is something that just is very natural to them. So it's an easy one. But getting that skill set of making uncomfortable conversations. Mm-hmm. You and I both been to networking events where you dropped in a room with a bunch of people you just don't know.
Right.
And I think, unfortunately, COVID kind of cut some of those ties off where people are the face-to-face is a little more difficult. But they need to kind of get over that hurdle or find a different path to communicate. If they're going to communicate, you know, via text or chat or however they're communicating, but making sure that you're making a connection with somebody that's strong and deep. A one-on-one is a huge thing. They schedule the one-on-one. If you meet somebody and they have one thing that you're interested in, and I don't care. I found somebody. I speak Swahili, and it's kind of a oddball thing. But I found somebody else in a networking group that did it as well. Well, I did a one-on-one with them. We had nothing in common other than that. But it's you just added somebody to your network.
Making that connection helps you get to whatever table you want to get to, for sure. Ted Lukash, consulting partner at the Era Group. Ted, appreciate your insights and your friendship and all the networking community work you do in and around Milwaukee.